It's Monday, January 16th, 2023, Martin Luther King Day in the U.S., and this is Markets Daily from CoinDesk. I'm Adrian Blust, your co-host and associate producer for CoinDesk Podcasts. On today's show, we are taking a journey through the streets of Germany, from Munich to Berlin, getting a pulse check from residents of both cities on how inflation, the war in Ukraine, and the sanctions on Russian energy have impacted everyday people's lives. And just a reminder, CoinDesk is a news source and does not provide investment advice. Inflation is running hot around the world, and Europe was hit particularly hard with increasing inflation rates. Why? Well, in part, it has to do with the proximity to the war in Ukraine and Germany's reliance of Russian oil and gas. In November, Germany's year-on-year official inflation rate was as high as 11.6%, while in the U.S., the Consumer Price Index was at 7.1%, according to Reuters and the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. As we've explained on the show before, most currencies are running inflated or dropping in value, the US dollar just being the cleanest dirty shirt relative to other currencies. Meaning, it's also inflating, but not as fast as the euro or other currencies because many are using the US dollar as the world's reserve currency. So spending USD in Europe now is a bit cheaper with the dollar close to parity with the euro, giving you a bit more buying power. Taking a quick look at the numbers right now, as of January 11th, 2023, 1 euro is equivalent to 1 US dollar and 7 cents in change. When I went back in November, the ratio was even closer to 1 to 1. And I can attest to this, things did seem more affordable using USD in Europe, and at one point, the dollar was even worth just a bit more than the euro. But within the EU, what's happening is that things are getting more expensive because suddenly there's a cutoff in the supply. With a cutoff in a supply of oil due to the sanctions imposed on Russia as a response to the war in Ukraine, the price of gas and oil has shot up, bringing the price of everything up with it. And of course, a lot of people need gas to heat their homes. So this winter is set to be particularly challenging for most people. However, people are getting paid the same, so they can't afford some of the things they are used to buying. So people have to make adjustments to spend less money, only able to pay for the things they can afford. Much of what we'll hear on this show today is how people have made those adjustments. What exactly have they had to sacrifice or cut out of their lives? What kind of lifestyle changes have they had to make? And what is the government doing to intervene? Are they? So just before we really set into the winter in the Northern Hemisphere, in late November, I flew to Germany, walked the streets, and asked for myself, what is it actually like to live in Germany given all the economic pressures happening within and around the country? I wanted to get my feet on the ground and hear it from the people living there. I figured it would be an interesting time to visit, among other reasons such as seeing some of my friends, it would be cheaper to go using the US dollar. I was curious though, if people would naturally begin speaking about how the war in Ukraine has affected them. So I kept things open-ended, often only asking how things have changed more generally. Simply asking, what has it been like living here over the years and what changes have you had to make in your lifestyle? And almost everyone that I spoke to would organically speak upon the economic pressures of inflation and the real impact that it has had on their lives. So I invite you to join me as we take a tour through the streets of Berlin and Munich. I first landed in Munich and spoke with Simon, a good friend who I had met along my travels. He was born in Germany and lived between Munich, Asunción, Paraguay, and Berlin, but now has returned back to Munich after spending a couple years in Berlin. He and his girlfriend Rumi generously offered to take me out to dinner. Simon, can you tell us a little bit about where we are right now and where you've been living?
Yeah, so we are currently in Munich, which is the main city from Bavaria in Germany, also the federal state capital. And we're currently sitting in a traditional, like it's a restaurant, but we have a different word for that kind of restaurants, which is Wirtshaus.
And by the way, most of my interactions with people were over food and dinners, so I hope you can excuse some of the ambient room sounds and sometimes the sounds of people enjoying their food.
So I think it's also super interesting to see, for example, if I look at how my parents reacted to that humanitarian or crisis or events happening in Ukraine, what I remember my dad saying was, it's literally like not even 1,000 kilometers to get to the Ukrainian border with Germany or from Germany, which is insane if you think about it, right? So it's it is something super real, and the reality is maybe measured by how close it is to your home. And then obviously there's not only the political crisis to it, but also what followed was the economical crisis, where especially in terms of the gas or energy that is heavily, where Germany is heavily reliant on Russia, we are now facing a lot of price increases, where those price increases are not only showing in the energy as a customer, as a private customer you are facing, but also you have to live with price increases all over the place, because it's actually getting more expensive for the whole economy to build the stuff. And sometimes even they don't have the necessary resources to build stuff. Also, not only natural resources, but also, I don't like the word, but human resources, like people. More people are maybe not even willing to work anymore for this kind of industry. So there's also a lack of that resource. And it's all ending up to what a friend of mine once said, that his experience of going to any kind of store, it has been a long time in the past since he went to a store, and he actually got everything that he was planning or intending to get. Because there's always like somehow for any product that he was looking for, there was a shortage and he couldn't find it anymore because it was out of stock. Which maybe was not happening before the actual crisis happened.
Shout out to Simon and Rumi for a very pleasant dinner and conversation. After a brief stay in Munich, I traveled by train to Berlin, the capital and largest city of Germany, where I arranged to meet with my friend James Cahill, who had moved from Ireland to Berlin and now has about 10 years living in the vibrant capital. I was told I must try a Currywurst while I'm in Berlin, which is a German sausage covered in red curry sauce. So James and I took the U-Bahn, or the city's subway, to one of the original homes of the Currywurst, Curry 36.
So is it
do you feel weird about that? It's after 8, so...
Is it normally
and free? Weekend is free 24 hours. For you, as a guest. You can bring a plus one.
We are live right now at Curry 36, trying the Currywurst for the first time, here with my homie, good friend James Cahill. What's up, James?
All good, bro. How are you?
Dude, excellent. Yeah, thanks for picking out this spot. I was told I must try a Currywurst while I'm in Berlin. And I haven't even eaten yet, taken a first bite yet, but here we go. Let's give it a try. How are you enjoying it so far?
Amazing. It's always good. Very consistent. You can't go wrong. Comfort food of Berlin.
Okay, so you moved here 10 years ago from Cork.
Cork, Ireland, yeah. Straight from there to Berlin. I've never looked back. I thought it would be maybe 2-3 years, but this city is just, it changes so many ways, kind of the opposite to other cities. Other cities get gentrified, the cool artsy stuff moves out, further out of the city, but in Berlin the government really protects this kind of culture. And I think also the huge difference here is the city was completely destroyed after the war, so it had to be rebuilt. And it's still not finished. So that's why I think a lot of creative people are drawn to move here, because there's still something to build. Rather than going to London, Paris, these are finished, beautiful, historical cities. Berlin may not be the most prettiest, but it's got a real sense of freedom.
Definitely.
And you can really see this in the art scene, in the club scene. You can be whoever you want, and there's really no judgment. It really is an island in Germany, it has completely different kinds of people, and it's a melting pot for multicultural communities to come together, and that's why I love it. Even the clubs, you know, they are the government now. Places like Berghain is now classed as a monument, not a nightclub. So they pay way lower tax. They get funded by the government to keep open. All the clubs survived COVID. They were all closed for 2 years. They're all open again. The government understands that this is actually part of the culture here. So all of these buildings could easily be knocked down. Big companies and corporates can come into cities like it has done in every city out there. And the clubs are the first thing to go. But that doesn't happen here. And I think that's what's really amazing.
What are some of the things you noticed that changed from before the pandemic to during the pandemic to now, like after?
In the city?
Yeah. In culture? Because you... Yeah. Love you mentioned that, like the clubs were at risk of, like, closing down, but then the government stepped in and actually kept them alive.
Exactly. So everything got funded. Like, even during COVID, people got money from the government. A lot of people lost their jobs. They tried to keep everyone here. So the population hasn't really changed, if not if it's increased. And in terms of changes, I think obviously cost of living goes up, but when you compare it still to other capital cities in Europe or in the world, it's still considerably lower. And I think rents are still, they're going up, but they're still lower. Like, there's a lot of, the government has also stepped in to block landlords from increasing rents. There's now a rent freeze for 5 years. You can't increase your rent.
Really?
Yeah. So the government, it's a very socialist place, and I think that's really special, though, how the people are taken care of. And I think that's what gives the city so much character, and why people are so friendly, and why people are very cheerful and happy when they come together, whether it's in a club, in a store, where we are now. Yeah, it's a very special place. Completely different to other cities in Germany as well.
How much longer are they planning to the rent freeze?
It started like 2 years ago, so another 3 years.
Wow, another 3 years.
But even then, it only can increase by a certain percentage. So it's not like they can just increase whatever. So it's a really, really interesting concept. Landlords aren't happy, but they're not the majority. So,
yeah, I mean, how are they able to even, like, I guess, sustain any kind of, like, overhead cost if the rent's frozen, but then maybe other prices are going up with,
for example,
inflation or something?
Yeah, so the costs are really only, like, the things like electricity, gas,
right,
water and stuff. But every citizen, like, last month got an extra 500 euros on the paycheck from the government. So that would help them pay their electricity through the winter and their gas. So it'll cover the increase. So the people, again, are not losing anything. Even though there's all the crises happening in the world, we're still protected.
Nice.
So it's a cash injection on your paycheck. You think it's your company paying, but it's actually the government putting it in. And whether you're unemployed, employed, whether you earn a million euros or 20,000 euros, you all get something.
An extra 500 euros from the government.
Yeah, to get you through the gas bills in the winter, because there's rumors that it's going to double. And you don't have to pay this back.
When did that start?
We got it 2 months ago.
And then it's supposed to continue?
One amount, and they will cover all the months through winter. And if we need more, they will probably give more. Yeah. So it's crazy. In a good way.
So it's like an ongoing kind of a winter stimulus for the increase in gas prices.
Exactly. Because the companies, of course, they'll try and squeeze every penny out of everyone. And the government understands we can't let that happen. So they give the people more money to pay the companies. Mm-hmm. Without even asking. It's automatic. You don't have to ask for it. Yeah.
How has it been with everyday expenses from before the pandemic to now? Like, let's say, just going out grocery shopping. So rent's frozen. Has anything else shifted?
You see the groceries going up a little bit, but it's still not considerably higher compared to places like UK, where they've had Brexit. They have it way worse, because it's more expensive to get things imported to there. But because we're still part of the EU, obviously Germany, there's more room for support, and also of course we get support from the EU itself, you know, and then also the German government, so it's two unions you're getting support from. Yeah. So it's a good setup, so we feel safe here, we feel like there's not, we're not gonna, you never feel like you're gonna be, you know, in danger, whether that's healthcare or you don't have to have that fear thinking, okay, if something goes wrong I lose my job, you know, even if you lose your job you still get 70% of your salary paid every month if you get let go or made, if you get laid off, with all the companies now doing that, so you're also paid anyways, so yeah.
Prices have shifted a little bit, you said?
Yeah.
But even then, it's like you feel safe because government's still covering you and the EU. Exactly. Like they're giving you a little extra package.
Yeah, exactly. It's always something good coming, and they quite consistently update the people, and they say, right, now we think we need to give something like this, so that's coming on your salary next week, now we need to do this. They even did, on them, the coolest thing ever, they made it public transport free for 3 months for the whole country, and it was even free to travel like you did to Munich in the summer.
I wish I did that 3 months ago or whatever.
And the whole point behind that wasn't necessarily COVID, it was to lower the emissions. Lower the emissions to stop getting people to use their cars so much. And it brought the emission level down to a record low, one of the lowest in the world, from doing this 3 months. And now because of COVID, people only pay 29 euros a month instead of 89 euros a month. Yeah. For unlimited travel.
Wow. So that's still going. Much cheaper public transit.
Yeah.
So I have a question. What do you think is causing the prices of oil and gas and electricity to go up anyway?
Yeah. So the gas pipeline, there was one big one to be... See, basically Germany... we rely too much on Russian gas. We get all our gas from Russia. Mm-hmm. We had a big pipeline being built, and now that's been destroyed. It was almost finished because they invaded Ukraine. Russia invaded Ukraine. That's now stopped, so we have to get our gas from elsewhere. But I think now they managed to do a deal with the Middle East, and now we get our oil from there. But I'm not sure if that's actually happening yet.
All right.
But we don't have to depend on Russia. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to eat our homes. It's our only... It's like our aorta. To our heart, yeah. But it's quite clever that the government quickly figured out how to fix this, you know? Right. So I think that's quite cool.
Still hungry, but also seeking to explore more of Berlin, we took the subway to a nearby Turkish restaurant to try their famous kebab. James and I grabbed a seat at a table with a local Berliner who had invited us to join him. His name was Amol, and he offered a pretty down-to-earth perspective, explaining some of his thought process for the things he's had to adjust in his lifestyle, including things he wants to keep, among other things that he cannot change. Where are we right now?
In Neukölln. In Berlin.
In Neukölln.
Neukölln. Yeah, yeah.
And we're having some...
Döner kebab.
Yeah, döner kebab.
Yes, and chicken soup and tea.
Yeah, this tea is delicious.
And Turkish pizza.
Yeah. And Turkish pizza. Yeah. And what's the name of the restaurant that we're in?
Imrin.
Got it. It's so awesome to be sitting here with you, Amol.
Yeah.
So you said you moved here from southern Germany, right? And then
yes, I'm from south of Germany, from the Black Forest, and I'm here since 6 years, and I love it. I love this moment in Berlin.
Over the 6 years, like, have you noticed any changes in the city? Like, have you noticed how things have evolved?
Yeah, There is no. I don't know. It's more expensive now, the life here, and still enough music and still good parties and difficult.
But you said that it's gotten more expensive.
Yeah,
and it's gotten more difficult.
Maybe not for me because I don't use a car. Because there is a lot of money about the energy and the gas and I'm biking a lot, so I think I'm okay, but maybe for the rest of Berlin there is a change about the energy, the right. Price of the energy.
Have you had to adjust your lifestyle to anything because things have changed?
Yes. Normally I like I love good cheese.
Mm-hmm.
So, but now for me is the only one. It's the cheap one.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. It's a double, and I think every one of us we are not rich. Me and my friends, we are not rich.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a change about the money. So. Maybe a bit less quality about the food and about the food. Because we try to save money when we go to buying. The food.
Yeah.
There is less quality because I need still my parties, my friends, and my cigarettes, my tobacco, but the food I can save money when I buy the cheap food.
You're buying cheaper food.
Yes.
Gotcha. Man.
Cheaper
cheese, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But dude, later. But you're here right now. We're all here right now, and this is cheap and delicious food, if I may say.
Expensive. But it was
$4.50
$4.50
Now six.
Yeah.
And how long did it take for it to go from 4 to 6?
This time is about the war.
Wars, yeah.
Yes, it is this war. So mm-hmm. The Ukraine and Russia.
Yeah,
it's sad.
Affects everyone.
So that's why everything is more expensive and it's simple.
Yeah.
It was interesting to hear from Amel how he has decided to bike more and eat cheaper food in response to the inflation and increasing prices. And it's true, the city's very bikeable and people can easily take the subway or U-Bahn to get anywhere. For my last stop of the night, of course, I had to stop by one of Berlin's nightclubs. The city is known to have some of the best nightlife in the world. I went to a relatively small club in Neukölln and met a few people. One of them, Vlad,
was the counsel to the president of parliament in Moldova,
took a moment with me on the balcony to chat.
Psychologically, I didn't feel safe. I ran away from my country.
So you found you feel safer here? Like you moved to Berlin for safety?
Well, safety and opportunity, as well. Yeah. The country I come from is under a lot of pressure right now, including because not only because of the war, but also because of the inflation, economic struggles, and the tensions between the big powers. And I've experienced all this political pressure that we've been exposed to. From Russia, first place, constant threats, energetic threats, and also military threats, like strategic and military threats.
How's this affected your life, Vlad?
Of course it did. Of course it did, because everything is more expensive now.
He summed up the current situation as he saw it pretty well.
You know, inflation is always happening. It's an economic process. Normally, it's happening because there are more services and goods pumped into the economy every year in comparison to the last year. But this time, the inflation is caused by the energy crisis. Before the war and the energy crisis, there was almost as a slim to non inflation in Germany, for example, although there was an economic growth, a constant economic growth. And economic growth normally goes hand in hand with a little bit of inflation. And this is like the normal process, how inflation happens. Whereas in this case, it's simply the energetic crisis has caused a domino effect of price increasing because everything has increased. The price for everything, for transportation and almost every goods that are sold or offered to us, they need to be transported. Except for the software and the intellectual property, of course. But even that, considering energy prices have increased. So it's not a normal process of inflation. It's crisis inflation.
I was grateful to have met Vlad there. He laid things out clearly, yet it all came from his own experience. One of the things that stood out to me from our conversation is his point that this kind of inflation is not a normal process of inflation. In fact, one could argue that it is self-inflicted, meaning that the central banks of Germany and the EU are the ones responding to these escalating prices due to the sanctions and giving more money to their people so that their people can continue to spend money and support the expenses that come with basic living, which is itself an inflationary policy. I want to circle back to the conversation I had with Simon and Rumi in Munich, because there, Rumi had asked me a question. Why is the US dollar equal to the euro? The European Central Bank. So the guys that are controlling how much euro is in circulation around the European Union, they are helping out the EU, propping up the market that is suffering. Because what's happening is that things are getting more expensive because suddenly there is a cutoff in a supply. We cut off the supply of oil. And so when there's less oil, that makes the oil that we have more expensive. Just that's supply and demand, right? But then people are getting paid the same. So they can't afford it. And so then the economy starts to go down. So then the central bank goes, oh crap, people aren't going to be able to afford this. Let's help people afford it. So then they give people money, like $300 or a free month in December. But then where's that money coming from? I think taxpayer money is part of it, but it's also, it's getting printed. It's literally getting injected into the system. When you are printing money, you're just throwing in more money into the system, which means that you have more supply, and that's inflation, right? Because now the money is worth a little less because you put more into the system. Less valuable because there's more of it circulating. Does that make sense?
Yeah. What my teacher would have said is probably it's a vicious circle.
It's a vicious circle.
Sorry. Yeah, no, I mean, exactly. So basically what you just explained, so you pump more money into the market, but that necessarily means that the prices are going up and then people are still left with the same purchase power.
It's a short-term solution because now we can get through December, now we can get through this winter, but then what happens? The inflation keeps going up because putting your money into the system is an inflationary process. It is what causes the inflation. And the reason why we're doing it is because things are getting inflated, making things more expensive. So then we... It's a vicious cycle, man.
Yeah.
And the consequence is actually what we're noticing right now. This parity of the US dollar and the euro, like the losing faith of the euro. The cryptocurrency actually offers somewhat of a way out because there is no central bank that's printing more Bitcoin. It's completely decentralized. And there's only a certain amount of Bitcoin that can exist in circulation. Right now, as of 2023, Bitcoin miners, or people who use their computers to participate in Bitcoin's blockchain network as a transaction processor and validator, are awarded 6.25 Bitcoins, or BTC, for each block they successfully mine. But by 2024, that 6.25 BTC reward per block will be cut in half to 3.125. And this is normal. This is actually written in Bitcoin's code, and it's called, well, halving, because it gets cut in half. Halving is considered one of the most pivotal events on the Bitcoin blockchain, and it happens about every 4 years. Each halving reduces the rate of inflation and as a result pushes the price of Bitcoin upward. In other words, halving reduces the rate at which new coins are created and thus lowers the available amount of new supply, even as demand increases. Over time, the impact of halving will diminish as the block reward approaches zero. Imagine that Bitcoin reward getting cut in half every 4 years, so from 6 to 3 until it approaches zero. The final halving will be in year 2140, when the number of Bitcoins in existence will reach the maximum supply of 21 million Bitcoin. So, again, between now and 2140, no CEO of Bitcoin, no board, no central body will tweak the rate at which Bitcoin gets mined or printed. So that's one interesting thing about Bitcoin.
And that's our show for today. Thank you very much for listening. If you have any questions or comments, send the show an email at podcast@coindesk.com, or you can email me directly at adamlevine@coindesk.com. If you like what we're doing, we always appreciate reviews on Apple Podcasts or your preferred listening platform. This episode was produced by Adrian Blust and myself, with further support from the podcast team over at coindesk.com. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll be back tomorrow with another episode of Markets Daily.